Do you know about all the musical genres that were created by black musicians? Like jazz, rock and roll, and folk music, to name a few. This Black Music Month, State Farm is celebrating the cultural impact and influence of music created and inspired by black innovators. Next time you're enjoying a song, trace it back to its origins and see for yourself. Check out the Black Music Forever station on Pandora, brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Dodolsky. I got my co-host, co-pilot here, Dr. Carl. And today we're going to be talking about the new, brand new, just hot off the press, pediatric obesity guidelines. And we're not even going to go through them step by step of all of it in there, because it's a huge guideline, big paper.
Although it's not like they have a million recommendations.
No,
they just have a lot of good background. They talk about their methodology and the basic recommendations. Yeah. Very holistic. Very holistic.
Extremely holistic. Jeez. So
the
people are mad. The headlines come out and they basically say experts are pushing drugs for weight loss.
Surgery
for weight loss. And so
the kids, but they're kids.
Somebody.
Now, what? One disclosure: I am an internal medicine and adult endocrinologist specialist. You're at least family practice. We have some pediatric people that we should probably get on. Your wife is a neonatologist, so generally speaking, she's not going to get into this stuff either specifically. But we're going to. This is just more of an overview, and
we're talking about the backlash
discussion
today.
Because of the. Yeah, kind of the backlash. We'll get someone on who's a pediatrician
to get a pediatric obesity specialist, because it is different than treating adults. We learned it. We had to do the our own little obesity board certification. There is a big component of pediatric obesity on there. I did, family medicine is the broadest. So not only did I do peds, I did adults, and I also did obstetrics, which was not my favorite thing to do. But anyway, I did it, and my brother, he doesn't know anything about kids. So he doesn't know a damn
thing. Other than some of the real specific monogenic and genetic disorders that cause obesity, very severe, because they turn into adults. Yeah. And so, we know them. And
Gotta look out for them. So the backlash was, it came out two days ago or 3 days ago. It doesn't matter.
A few days ago.
A couple days ago. We're doing this podcast now. I did a very quick few little.
By the time this podcast comes out, it'll be about a week old.
It's old news. Not really. But I did a few little social media posts about it, because what happened, you get these headlines that say, experts say to take drugs and surgery for weight loss. And people this is classic. People do not read beyond the headlines. If you read the little short article about it, there are a few little snippets of things that we're going to talk about. One of the experts, pediatric obesity experts, said obesity is not a lifestyle disease. It's more a disease of the brain. And it's kind of like, we'll get into that. That's one of the things that specifically.
It's not wrong, but it's not exactly right either. That's the problem. And then it's a quote. People take it and then they run with it and then they start attacking, because we can't have nice things.
And so I'm getting tagged all day right now. I keep seeing, hey, Dr. Nadolsky made a video about this. Go check him out. Or I'll just get tagged, Dr. Nadolsky, what are your thoughts on this person? Because what everybody's saying is just, they're simply looking at the headlines. That's it. What I said in my little video is that, like, if you actually look at the guidelines, they're very straightforward, and they actually push lifestyle more than
anything, of course.
Like it's very aggressive.
Like all evidence-based mainstream medical guidelines that have anything to do with absolutely anything that could be benefited from lifestyle, if the evidence is there, which it is, it's always emphasizes first line, absolutely focusing on lifestyle efforts in a very broad and holistic manner.
Yeah.
going from simple to very intensive lifestyle efforts. And that is up in front, front and center.
Is that you knocking? All that Who's stuff. Knocking? I mean, who's knocking? What is that knocking?
No, that's our, that's the people working on our house. sorry, ruined it.
House is falling down. Kids are getting surgery for weight loss when they're not even a recommended lifestyle. No, so that's what these people are saying. These people are mad. They're like, well, whatever happened to diet and exercise? I'm like, the whole thing is about diet and exercise and lifestyle. Yeah. In fact,
some would argue it's too heavy on diet and exercise. Yes. Because, and that's where it gets into these quotes by one of the authors who said that it's a very genetic brain triggering disease process, which we've talked about before. Yeah.
My argument would be it is a lifestyle disease, but the brain and genetics and environment push that specific lifestyle. That's what I would say to be more specific.
Yeah, I mean, different people will debate that. That some of the researchers will fight that, like we talked about. We'll get Anya on here, and the actual underlying root issue is a lot of the polygenics. We're not going to talk about the severe, rare, monogenic.
Which they do talk about in the guidelines. They do. They list
talk
them
about
up.
Them, but they don't. But they don't include them as in the recommendations.
No, they list them out though.
So they actually excluded those. They just review them, and there are other guidances for those very rare things that ultimately we all do need to be more aware of. For example, going to that a second, talking about how heritable this is, and most people, by far, it's polygenic with a lot of different genetic factors driving the kids in this obesogenic environment, which is the other part of this, right? And struggling with obesity. But then, remember when we were at Obesity Week, or maybe it was before you got there, and I was watching the genetic talk by Dr. Farouk, who's the
leading, I think,
the global leader in genetic obesity. Yeah. And, they were talking about how historically in the media, people would see these really little bitty kids, like infant/toddlers really early on in life with very severe obesity. And these kids were being taken away from their families because they thought it was child abuse, because everyone was like, well, you must be feeding your kid all sorts of food. But they had very severe biological drive to eat well beyond what their metabolic needs were and have severe obesity. And yet the parents were being punished and the families were being shamed.
Yeah.
But these kids probably had just severe genetics.
We hear about the Prader-Willi and the syndromes, we also see some of the monogenics where they straight up have a MC4, POMC, mutation of some sort, one of these things in the brain that we've talked about in the past. And we have friends that have talked about relatives who they have to lock the cabinets, and sometimes the cabinets are broken open and they'll just ravenously eat, whole things of peanut butter, despite having just had dinner and that type of thing. So anyway, these things do exist. It's good to have these guidelines are aware. But I think the big thing about this is that clearly people just don't read past the headlines. People are like, I can't believe they're doing this. Why not just do diet and exercise and good old fashioned lifestyle? Well, that's what most of the guidelines were absolutely about. They talk about the different guidance they give and how they have these comprehensive centers, which not everybody has access to, which is good to understand. And then when to consider maybe adding in medicine or surgery. So the argument is, because people are like, and then there's other people, there's the Hayes group, the healthy at every size group. They're going, this is atrocious. They're going to cause eating disorders. They're going to cause this and that. And it's like, well, they're ignoring the unhealthful effect, the harmful effects of obesity.
Especially in pediatrics.
Yeah.
Pediatric obesity is extremely severe in the risk of health problems. And those health problems are harder to deal with if you develop them when you're a kid.
Yeah.
And by the way, obesity itself, the disease of obesity, which is, I think, what this quote that we talked about, where that comes from, is also harder to treat once the disease of obesity is sort of established. Even though, despite all the different genetics that can really drive the risk of obesity in our obesogenic environment, we know that we have lots of studies that show that despite those genetic risks, lifestyle efforts can really help prevent obesity. Yeah.
mitigate.
It's less effective though to actually treat the obesity.
Yeah.
You know, which is where the medicines come in and where that guy's quote saying, well, it's a disease of the brain, not so much lifestyle. You know, to some degree, I feel like that's a quote that's a, and we'd have to ask him, you know, but obviously that's not what he meant because it's not in the guidelines.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of interesting.
I mean, it's absolutely heavy in lifestyle and intensive behavioral therapy first. But I will say that we know, despite the grade A level of evidence for lifestyle therapy, because it's so obviously safe and has some benefit for all sorts of things, it isn't as effective when you're, first of all, it's not as effective for everybody.
Yeah.
And that's because we have these biological drives once obesity is established.
I don't like the quote. There's not enough nuance in the quote. It just, right. I don't know what his context is.
Journalists ask us stuff, they take the quotes that they want. They don't give all the quotes. So who knows what he really said overall.
Who knows what it was? Because you develop obesity because of your lifestyle, that whether that's your fault or not, if that makes sense. So like energy balance is a thing. We talked about that, calories in, calories out. These kids with monogenic deletions or mutations ravenously eat, it's still their lifestyle, but it's not their fault, if that makes sense.
I think the words, people would debate those words, because I'll tell you, like, yeah, the obesity, you know, researchers that do this stuff that get real into that would say, well, that's not lifestyle. That's an underlying root cause of driving their energy intake.
I guess.
And it's not really a lifestyle. It depends on what you call lifestyle.
Yeah, lifestyle is like what anybody does.
Like even with the medicine and surgery, what it's doing is it's working on that underlying root pathophysiology to help the people reduce their energy intake, which you could argue is lifestyle. So it's,
I think you're right.
We have to work on these wordings. Yeah, you know what I mean?
I think that is the issue, because a lot of people took issue with that. I'm like, well, it's still our lifestyle, because whether it's our fault or not, but it is the brain driving that lifestyle. I don't know, whatever. Right. It doesn't matter.
And then you could argue that that's not truly a lifestyle, because if they were out in the wilderness, they'd be consistently seeking food, because that's what is the drive.
Yeah.
And if it's available, they're going to eat it. And most of us would. And because we have multiple mild, at least polygenic risks of obesity, and some of us get away with not being as intense.
You
with
have
it and,
polygenic and risk others. Of abs in the utero. I say it every single episode.
I know. Now it's going to be every a real
single,
thing. Because you've
every single episode. My brother has polygenic risk score for having huge pecs and chiseled abs since birth.
And yet, you know what that actually reminds me of? So not only do we have the genes that sort of, what they say, load the gun, and then the obesogenic environment that triggers it, but then think about all the other things that this goes back to our discussion on obesity pathophysiology, is that then you throw in, psychiatric issues.
Yeah.
So stress, binge eating disorders, you know, and the reason that made me just think about it is because of wrestling, you know, cutting weight for wrestling all those years. If you talk to me or any other, not you, if heavy weight, but anybody else who's cut weight,
not even a single pound.
We understand some of that disordered eating stuff that my patients talk to me about. So at least I can say, I know it doesn't look like it, but I get that. So that's a whole nother aspect. And then you throw in medications, medical problems. We obviously, this whole guideline does talk about screening for, well, what's going on? Not only all the lifestyle and you know, the nutrition and exercise throughout the life, but mental health, medications, other endocrine disorders.
Yeah, they go into social determinants of health.
Which is a big deal these days, because it's true. The evidence is there.
I don't know. I always think of the single mom working two jobs to make ends meet. She's got two kids, three kids, whatever. And maybe not living in the nicest neighborhood with, you know, convenience stores around, but not a nice, you got to take the bus to the, you start adding all these little things in there. So all those things do make a big
people
difference.
Don't realize it's, there's a lot of things going on, a lot of moving parts. It's pretty easy for the fitness trainers and professionals out there. You know, the 26-year-old guy who like works in the gym every day and works with patients and eats really well and has good genetics and has abs all the time saying, "Well, gosh, why can't these people just do diet and exercise?"
Yeah, it's something. It's just not having
not helpful
empathy. And then you know, some people will say, "Well, it doesn't mean it's not hard." It's like, yeah, but the level of difficulty is just on exponentially different, on the order of like not just 10 times, but 100 times or more for some individuals.
And especially once the obesity is already set in.
I think that's the issue.
I mean, how many friends do we know, you know, we grew up with who really had weight struggles since we were little kids? We all played sports together. It seemed like our dietary habits were relatively similar sometimes. It wasn't like obviously egregious. And yet, despite wrestling and football workouts and all that stuff, some guys struggled more with their weight. And I'm sure they were taking in, you know, other sources of food that we didn't necessarily see because of genetics or whatever, their environment that they had at home, et cetera. But, we had to learn that too, as we've gone through this process. We didn't understand. We were just like those trainers once upon a time back in our day saying, well, we can do it. I have abs, so everyone else should be able to have abs. Fault, it turns out that's not true.
I don't fault the people that don't understand it. I fault them when we try to explain and they push back a little bit harder. I think that's what
that's right. Yeah, because instead of ignorance, so that, you know, if we get into word definitions, right? Ignorance, sure. But once you learn and you have access to the science and the evidence and you still like deny it and in a way that you're being like an asshole, that's not helpful. Like then you're just being an asshole.
Yeah.
Or foolish or something. And you're just trying to push your agenda or whatever it is.
Well, I mean, the bottom line is like, so for these kids, oh, is it so scary that these drugs and surgeries are being they're being a little bit more aggressive? Because what before they called it the watch and wait. And what we're seeing is that we're not really impacting people despite all these aggressive lifestyle, you know, telling people, hey, we should help them with the diet and exercise. And unfortunately, it doesn't work for many people.
Right.
So then they're going, hey, we got to be aggressive about this. Because as you said, when we talk about area under the curve, they start getting these diseases earlier instead of like in their 40s and 50s, type 2 diabetes, they're getting them in their teens. And once you have that, you're putting yourself at a very early cardiovascular death or other types of deaths that are out there. So morbidity, mortality.
Well, for example, so I'll give you one example where I do know a fair amount about the pediatric population is that those with significant obesity who develop insulin resistance and type 2 diabetes early on, they require insulin sooner because I look at it as, well, their pancreas didn't have enough time to develop and fully mature, right? Because they developed obesity, insulin resistance, fatty pancreas, which we will call it that, and it failed before they ever really matured. And then even when we treat the underlying issues like their obesity and all that stuff, their pancreas doesn't work.
Yeah.
It seems like when they're young adults. And so, you know, we really do need to be aggressive earlier on. And if they're not responding well to lifestyle, we really do have to think about medications and surgery for these kids because the severe consequences of obesity and the adiposity-based diseases like diabetes, heart disease, sleep apnea, arthritic problems, you know, musculoskeletal issues, those far outweigh any little potential risks that people might think that come with these medications and surgeries that actually the data suggest are not really there. Like,
So
the benefits far outweigh the risks. So, you know, so far, I mean, we got to keep studying, right?
Yeah. So when we were at, they presented the data on the STEP Teens trial when we were at the obesity conference in November, 2022. God, my years are just flying by, whatever. 2022. just 2 months ago when we were
a couple months ago.
And, this is semaglutide in teenagers of ages 12 to 18, I believe, and significant reduction in BMI. What was it 16?
It was way better than what I would have expected for pediatric population.
Because
kids it's hard because they're growing. They have different, you know, physiology and stuff.
It was good. It was good. So that's what people are pointing out. Like there's 200 participants. How do we know this stuff is safe? Well, you know, in adults, I have actually 18-year-olds on this stuff. And they're so thankful because they've struggled with weight their whole lives, and they haven't had anything that could help them. They were just ravenous and hungry. And so, like you said, the risks seem to be minimal, other than GI, adverse events, maybe a little bit of nausea,
A small little risk of gallstones.
Yeah.
But man, the benefits are amazing.
So my question for these people that are so upset about it, it's like, what's your suggestion? I just tweeted out exercise or nutrition education alone will never, ever, ever solve the obesity epidemic. And what I mean by that, I'm not saying we shouldn't keep studying and learning more. I'm saying education of individuals of how to eat. Let me be clear, so it's not just taken out of context. Nutrition education to individuals, telling them what to eat, will never solve the obesity epidemic. Until we somehow find a way to change our environment, which will not happen in our lifetimes, I don't think.
Right, and there are too many competing factors in that too. Yeah. That gets into politics, global politics. That
big food.
What are we going to do? Like, force everyone to live in a garden and only eat vegetables and on dessert. That's what they want,
And that's then, right. That's the only way I see. We'd have to live on farms and do our own farming and we get, where's the farm babe? Let's get the farm babe back here and let's talk about, like, we'd have to do the farming. You have to go and pick your own berries and whatever else. Anyway,
you know what? I got a little bit of a tangent, but I actually just saw there was in JAMA, one of the JAMA journals, I just shared just kind of a cool little study that they did for elementary kids where they were teaching them about gardening, about food, vegetables, diet, and cooking. I think that's pretty good.
That's
cool. A way to help, start early education.
Yeah.
No. And it had some metabolic benefits just on its own.
Yeah. I think that type of thing is wonderful by itself, unless they've, because the thing is like, and we see it where our kids go to these birthday parties. And I've noticed, some of the kids that have a little bit of excess weight, they'll eat a few, treats. And I've noticed my daughter, she loves them, but she'll maybe eat a half of it and be like, okay, I'm full, daddy. Bye. And I'm like, hey, that's not a learned, I didn't teach her this. It was physiological. It was biological. I didn't do that.
Yeah.
So.
Which is amazing. And then on the other hand, it seems, how people always say, well, gosh, that person eats everything they want. Well, there's a little bit of that too.
Everyone has different
abilities to sort of modulate their metabolism and whatnot. I mean, because I see the same thing with my kids, and my Trey, the 10, almost 11-year-old, he's a little meathead. He probably, if we went based purely on pediatric BMI percentages, he actually has overweight, but he's pretty buff and lean for a 10, 11-year-old, but he sometimes will be the same. He can get away with eating lots of stuff because he works out so much and has some sort of metabolic flexibility, we'll call it. But on the other hand, once in a while, he'd be like, he and our daughter, like, nope, I'm good. Where I'm looking at him going, oh my God, I don't think I would stop.
Yeah, I don't know. That is weird.
It's like, holy
cow. Interesting.
So everyone's different.
Yeah.
And the kids have so much more genetic drive than we even realize.
Yeah. So the gist is all these people that are poo-pooing these experts, which, expert opinion isn't.
But it's not just that. This is not expert opinion.
No, they're using RCTs.
This was based upon systematically reviewed, graded, heavily graded based upon the evidence, the harms and the benefits of the studies to grade these recommendations. So for like example, I'm just looking at one where it talks about the surgery, for kids 13 and older with, a BMI greater than 120th percent of the 95th percentile, because that's how you do it in pediatrics, different for adults, should be, sent for evaluation for metabolic bariatric surgery. And it's recommended to consider, but it's a grade C, for example. And I don't know that we need to get into that for people out there. Whereas like the pharmacotherapy, actually, I think if I go back and look, it's a grade B. But
the funny thing is, so semaglutide is the older or younger brother of liraglutide, Saxenda. So Wegovy is semaglutide. Saxenda is liraglutide. Liraglutide is daily. That one's been approved for adolescents already. A couple of years ago, it got approved. 3 years ago, maybe now. 2.5. Nobody ever, nobody,
I just got approved.
Nobody ever said, yeah, so nobody ever said anything about that. Qsymia actually is also approved.
Yeah.
In adolescence. Qsymia is phentermine topiramate.
Phentermine topiramate. 12 and over.
12 and over. Again. But so it's like all of a sudden now, just because the headlines, people are like in an uproar, but these things have already been around. So anyway, our whole thing is by discussing this here, which is like, can y'all just kind of actually like look at what's beyond the headlines and actually read the guidelines that are being presented? Of course not. Not everybody's going to do it, but I'm telling you.
You know what's disappointing about that, I guess, is that the people who are making the biggest fuss about this are what I would consider our healthcare professional colleagues. They're like fitness trainers, professional.
A lot of them are RDs, you know, though. Like, they're this Hayes group, I've noticed.
And well, yeah, or and RDs. And it's like, so we're on the same team. You guys are healthcare professionals. Read the guideline. Don't just go with your, you know, initial reaction of what's it that everyone does that we call it that political extremists use
the outrage culture.
Yeah, maybe. Outrage culture. Yeah, everyone just has an outrage reaction. You know, don't just fall back on that. You're a healthcare professional. We're all on the same team. So read the guideline. Be appreciative that it really emphasizes lifestyle, like all guidelines do. But then acknowledge the science and the actual clinical benefit to harms of where medications and surgeries come into play, and just read the whole guideline. I mean, again, I'm not a pediatrician. I deal with our own adult stuff, but I just read through this quickly and realized it's pretty reasonable. Of course it is. I mean, it's experts that went through a huge systematic review and good methodology and weighed the pros and cons and the level of evidence and the biases and all that stuff to come up with these recommendations.
Yeah.
They didn't just make it up.
No. So anyway, think about that. Think about what you'd rather see done instead. Current lifestyle guidance hasn't really panned out. It does in intensive.
Right.
They do.
Well, the keto zealots think that's
so. If you want to put the kids on keto, go ahead. But the thing is, like, they do show, like, if in an intensive behavioral comprehensive program, lifestyle can work. It's just really hard to get into those programs. And it doesn't mean to not try those programs either. What people are thinking is that, like, they're just throwing drugs. Right. It's like, no, you still try these other things.
Right. Which is not true.
No.
We don't do that with anything. And all those, and like you said, kind of going back to the semantics and the quotes and stuff, the medications help treat the pathophysiology so that the kids can modify their lifestyles, change their dietary intake, lose the weight. Oftentimes that ends up resulting in better exercise, which is good no matter whether you lose weight or not, which goes back to our Louder with Crowder thing. Making fun of
Louder
the lady
with Crowder.
With obesity trying to do yoga. And he said it's...
Anyways. Thanks for listening. So, we'll get a pediatric obesity specialist on at some point. May not be next week, but maybe sometime.
To really dig into details for people out there to know what are these really recommending and what can you do about it.
So go ahead and read the guidelines. I'll link them in the show notes. Have a good one.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities.
With the $5 meal deal at McDonald's, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Price and participation may vary for a limited time only.